Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to Pro Wrestling Flashback. I am Sinbad, and of course we have Contreras with me. How are you doing, Contreras?
I'm doing fantastic.
Awesome, awesome. And everybody remember, we are proud members of SuperFriendsUniverse.com, and you can visit us at SuperFriendsUniverse.com/PWF, which is, you know, great. That's a preferred way of coming to listen to us. So we're going to talk about WCW 1994. I think we're starting about May. Actually, like, I'm carrying this like I'm smart, like I know. Contreras just told me, like, 5 minutes ago where we were, because I completely forgot. So that's good. All right. First thing, though, once again, I want to tell everybody to listen to that Dave Sullivan / the Equalizer interview that we did last week. It's also available on that website. It was awesome. He buried a lot of people. A lot of people. And it was really
funny.
Yeah,
I know. When you don't have to ask a question to get a guy to bury somebody, that's always good.
Yeah.
When they bury him on their own.
Yeah, he did it on his own, which, you know, he's a really nice guy and really carried himself well. So thanks again to Dave Sullivan. All right, let's go ahead and start off in May of 1994. All right, we have the world champion right now is still it's Ric Flair. The United States champion is
Steve Austin.
Steve Austin. TV champion is Lord Steven Regal. And there's like a weird thing going on with Flair. Ric Rude and Vader and Sting over that WCW International title. Go ahead and explain that to start us off.
Yeah, Sting won the International title from Ravishing Rick Rude at Spring Stampede, which we covered a couple of weeks ago. And during that match, Harley Race, Rick Rude was about to give Sting the Rude Awakening while the referee was down, and Harley Race, I guess he was going to hit Sting with the chair. I guess he couldn't wait for Rick Rude to give him the Rude Awakening and then hit him with the chair. And so Sting sees him coming at him with the chair, and so Sting just drops out of the Rude Awakening, and he hits Rick Rude right in the back of the head with the chair, and he knocks Harley Race out of the ring, and then Sting covers him 1-2-3. And then we go to May 4th, 1994, in Fukuoka, Japan, at the Fukuoka Dome, for New Japan Pro Wrestling, and Rick Rude pins Sting to win the title back following a knee drop off the top to the champion's head, and after he had hit him with the title belt. And this was the match that actually ended Rick Rude's career, because the setup for the ring in this match was the ring was on an elevated platform, so you know you could step off to get to the platform. But then you had to step off like another level to get like right there to ringside. And Sting apparently, he did one of those, over the top rope dives onto Rude. And so Rude, he didn't land flat. He landed like, bent his back over the side of that, the platform that was raised up. And that's what, injured him. I mean, it didn't come out till later. He was injured so badly. But anyway, he went on to win the match, and then they go to Slamboree, they're building up the feud with Vader and Rick Rude, and, you know, they're cutting promos and stuff. Not doing much on TV, just, you know, like, doing promos. And
just to interrupt you real fast, it was on, Saturday night and stuff like that. They were building it up.
Yeah, and they were going to have an international title match at Slamboree that year. And
yeah.
In between that the Japan match and Slamboree, Rude has gotten he had to go to the doctor, and I guess he had to get back surgery, and it eventually ended with him having to retire. So So he ended up leaving, and they said something like when Flambry went on there that Rick Rude showed up like just like, I don't know, at a whack or something, and I don't know what that meant, but and that they actually reviewed the tapes from Japan and they were going to give Sting the title back. And but we'll get to that when we get to the show.
Showed up out of whack. That sounds like Tony Schiavone commentary if I've ever heard it before.
Yeah, that sounds like, I don't know, it sounds like he showed up in no condition to compete or something like that, you know, the classic no condition to perform.
No, but I mean, like, Tony Schiavone would be always, all the time just say things that, like, just to sweep things under the rug, you know, like,
yeah.
Trying to get rid of a storyline. I know you know what I'm talking about. You do it all
yeah,
the time.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Just like, you know, like, yeah, well, he's not here anymore, so, you know, or the best was when Johnny B. Bad left for the WWF, Tony Schiavone said, and I quote, well, Johnny B. Bad decided he couldn't hang with the big boys anymore, so he went up north. Ha! Like that. And it was,
or when they were explaining something ridiculously stupid in WCW, he just like, well, why not? Why not? He was hilarious. I love Tony Schiavone.
Yeah,
Tony Schiavone was great.
So great.
He got crapped on way too much near the end.
Oh yeah, they would shit all over him. While we're you know jerking off about Tony Schiavone, might as well talk about how when he came to TNA and he's wearing like the most like gaudiest outfit in the world. It's like a Hawaiian shirt over a Kiss shirt. And he had like a beard that didn't match his hair. He was so cool.
Looked like something Mark Madden would wear on Nitro.
Yes. Oh,
and
horrible.
His hair was dyed like blonde, and he had a goatee, and he had a. That was a hell of a segment. I love that. You know, he's up there.
He looked like Guy Fieri from the Food Network.
Oh, yeah, Guy's Big Bite and Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives.
Yes.
And they never did anything with him again. I mean, I don't know. He doesn't even want to remember that time. I mean, he hasn't done any of the fan fests or anything because he just wants to block, like, anything from wrestling out of his mind.
Honestly, like, he's so great. I don't know why he's like a big, like, he's a big broadcaster now, so, you know, when I was doing my FSM thing, I probably should have got Schiavone. That would have made the company. It would have been way more.
Yeah, I feel like trying to find, like, a radio broadcast of him calling minor league baseball just to hear him again.
Yeah. All right, so let's get back into these things as we went on a 5-minute rant about how awesome Tony Schiavone is. All right, so Eric Watts is, like, finishing up with the company. Pretty much around this time, and you could tell because he does a lot of jobs. So they're getting rid of Eric Watts, and they're really starting to elevate Johnny B. Badd as like more than like a low card guy. He seems to be getting like a lot like more prominent TV matches. It still gets jobbers, but he's in like you know where they like put people in the location on the card. Like, you know, like if you're wrestling second on the show, no one gives a shit about you. But if you're, you know, the main event or right in the middle of the show and they advertise you coming up, they know, or you know that they're, you know, going to do something with you.
Yeah.
And who are the tag champs are the Nasty Boys right now.
Yeah. And, you know, I really like Johnny B. Badd. I think people crap on Johnny B. Badd too much as a wrestler. I thought he was pretty good.
No, I thought so too. So since the TV doesn't really explain things so well, let's just do the pay-per-views, or we'll do Slamboree and we'll kind of discuss how the match happened and what led up to it.
Okay.
It's a lot easier way to talk about it.
Real quick, I think something we should talk about is you know they had the Steamboat and Flair rematch on WCW Saturday Night. I don't think we got to that last time.
It was
weird because, you know, they were having a dispute over the finish, and they did a thing with Flair and Steamboat at ringside, and it made it look like Flair was given the title back and they were going to wrestle for it. It kind of made it seem like the title was held up, but it really wasn't. And I think they might have added on, like, when he won the Smash, like, added on a title ring to his number or something like that.
Yeah.
When he beat Steamboat. But, yeah, this was a hell of a match. I mean, just another great Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair match. And even though they weren't what they once were, like, back in 89, you know, it wasn't like totally like an incredible match. It was just awesome. So that's the best way to describe it.
No, it was great. I
remember the finish was Steamboat was going for the leapfrog, and you know, they did the spot where Flair, you know, hit him in the groin as he was trying to go under for the leapfrog, and then he pinned him 1-2-3, I believe.
Yeah, I remember I had heard about their matches, but I hadn't really seen anything. So them like meeting up was kind of like a big deal at the time.
Yeah.
And 94 WWF was so horrible. So I was, you know, WCW was like my only, really all I had, it seemed like. You know, I didn't give a shit about, you know, barely anything that was going on in the WWF at the time. So,
yeah, and it was at a time when, like, the territories had all dried up and there was nothing else on, unless you go to, like, Smoky Mountain.
Yeah.
Smoky Mountain was, like, the only other thing out there. And,
Smoky,
I mean, because that used to...
Something I only... Go ahead, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, because I remember, like, back in the late 80s, man, every weekend I got NWA, WCW on Saturday nights and Saturday mornings and on Sundays, and I got WWF Superstars and All-American Wrestling, and then I can watch World Class, and I can watch UWF, and, I mean, it was just, God, there was so much good stuff back then. That if something did suck, if a product did suck, then you had something else to watch.
See, like, you being old has its perks, because, like, you know, 2010 sucks, and, you know, like, there's nothing good, but you had all that awesome stuff, like, you know, you could tell me how great, you know, it was to have Magnum P.I. on television, like, you know, first run. I can't do that. I watch Full House, you know? It's different for me. It's not fair. But,
Yeah, well, there was so much great stuff back then.
But the Smoky Mountain thing, I only knew about that through, like, Pro Wrestling Illustrated. I didn't get to see this stuff, you know? I didn't know, you know, I just heard about, like, you know, the feud between Abdullah the Butcher and, like, was it like a Buddha? What was that? Was that ECW? Or was that Smoky Mountain?
No, I think it might have been just like on an independent show. Because I remember, when he burned Abby and they showed the pictures in PWI?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I remember those. I think that was just like in an independent show. I don't think it was ECW or anything at the time.
Yeah, see, people think PWI is like a joke now, but I swear, like, back in the 90s, that was the magazine to have. It was awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it so much more than WWF.
Yeah, I still wish I had all my old magazines. But, like, you know, you get up, you don't think about things back then, and then you wind up getting rid of them, shit like that. I feel like going on eBay and buying a bunch of the old ones, you know.
Yeah. I really should. Okay, we'll start with Slamboree 94. It's another, they have a Legends match on here. And we'll start off with the first match. It's the U.S. champion Steve Austin. He beat Johnny B. Badd. I really don't remember this match at all.
Yeah, I just remember it being a pretty good match. You know, you got Austin and Johnny B. Badd at the time, and they're two good workers, so they had a good match. And what was the finish here? Oh, Sherry Martel showed up at ringside.
Yeah, that's like the only noteworthy thing really about it. See, she's, like we said 2 weeks ago, Sherry showed up on a Saturday night saying that she's looking for the next world champion. She wants a world champion to be, you know, she wants to manage a world champion. So she's like, she's showing up at matches of, like, certain people to, you know, so people think that she's scouting them, you know. She's scouting these people. And another thing that's noteworthy is this show was in Philly, and this is when ECW was really starting to blow up. So there's a very it's a very pro ECW crowd here.
Yeah, this was when I'm sure you and I only heard of ECW through the magazines at the time, and we knew that it was something different, and the Philly crowd. The Philly crowd was great. Saw Hat Guy for the first time.
Yes, that's the first time. That's the national television debut of Hat Guy. All right, then they had a Legends match with Terry Funk, and he wrestled Tully Blanchard, which is so funny because, like, after all they were trying to do to get Tully Blanchard in WCW, and it took forever to try, you know. I mean, seriously, for years and years they tried bringing him back. I mean, you haven't seen the guy in WCW since 89? And they bring him back 5 years later.
Actually, 88. Fall of 88. No, he was in WWF in 89, my fault. And he'd done some stuff with AWA, but nobody was even watching AWA at that point. So
yes.
It didn't matter.
So they're trying to bring him back for the Horsemen. They couldn't make a deal. But they bring him back for this throwaway Legends match at Slamboree 1984 to wrestle Terry Funk to a double DQ in, like, a short match. It's, like, 7 minutes long. And the only thing you go ahead.
No, I just remember, you know, Funk was already big in Philly, but Tully Blanchard got a great reaction because Philly was a Horseman town as well, you know, from back in the 80s, because, you know, Philly fans love the Four Horsemen. They both got some really good ovations coming out, and I just remember this is just like just a brawl. I don't even think there was much wrestling to it. I remember seeing the first time I saw Terry Funk do a moonsault was on this show, and actually it caused some, like, controversy in the back because Vader was going to do one in his match at the end of the show. And, you know, he I guess he thought it looked less impressive if like a 60-year-old man is doing a moonsault, you know, early on in the card, and then have take something away from him doing it in the main event, you know.
Well, he's lucky. He probably, like, do you think there was maybe an altercation? Because I couldn't see Vader faring very well against Terry Funk.
No, I just think that, you know, he just, because I saw a shoot interview with him, with Vader, and he had talked about, you know, maybe think a little more about things like that when you're putting the show together or something. It's probably Terry Funk. He probably might have been told not to do it, and he probably went out there and did it on his own. You know, Terry Funk's crazy, so he can do what he wants to anyway.
All right,
and I just remember, I just remember at the end of this match, they had, you know, the broadcast thing for the Legends match was Gordon Sully and Bobby Heenan, and Terry Funk, he's gone crazy, and he's throwing chairs at ringside, and Bobby Heenan just stands up and uses Gordon as a shield, and Gordon just looks like, what the hell's going on?
That's awesome. This next match has, like, a bit of build-up for it, finally, of one of these matches. Larry Zbyszko beat Lord Steven Regal in a non-title match. And Zbyszko, he'd been a commentator for a while, for about a year and a half, pretty much. Just basically doing commentary, talk about playing golf all the time. And Regal comes out one week and kind of tells Zbyszko that he doesn't have it anymore. And you know, Zbyszko obviously trying to be, you know, a man, saying, like, you know, I could beat you. And then, it, you know, through this happened a couple of weeks, and then eventually just led to this match. And,
yeah, I think he ripped the clothes off of Regal or something like that. Like, Regal was in a suit or something, and I think he, like, ripped some of the clothes off of him and maybe slapped him or something like that.
Yes, and Sherry came out during this actual match and was taking her notes again.
Yeah. I was surprised how good of a babyface Zbyszko was. Because, you know, I remember him as a heel. He was just, his wrestling was boring. He was boring, to me anyway. He would stall like for 5 minutes before a match. I remember when he was taking partners with Arn Anderson, he used to piss Arn Anderson off to get the match going because he wants to do the stalling routine. for like 3 or 4 minutes before every match. And
yeah.
And I just did not care for him as a heel, but as a babyface, he could talk, and I just enjoyed him so much more.
Yeah, he seriously wasn't a really good babyface always, because he would always, you know, he would talk a lot, and you would think like, wow, he could back that up because he's a good wrestler. And I liked him as a heel, too. I loved him as a heel. Him and Arn as a team were one of my favorite teams, like, seriously, of all time. So
yeah, they were great. That was really the only time as a heel I liked Zbyszko, because, you know, you can take things on Anderson.
Yeah, so Arn Anderson was so, like, Arn Anderson in, like, 91 was a lot like DiBiase in 92, how they would always wear white trunks, and they would always be tan, like, so ungodly tan that, like, you know, they could go into Harlem and blend in. They're so tan. Oh, that's so great. I'd love when they do that. All right. And Bunkhouse Buck is there. We talked about how he showed up. Jack Swagger's father, Bunkhouse Buck, wrestled Dustin Rhodes in a bull rope match. And the only thing that I remember, at least, is Robert Parker tried interfering and missed and hit Bunkhouse Buck.
Yeah, I remember this was, you know, Bunkhouse Buck won the first match in his specialty, the Bunkhouse match, and so they had his bull rope match, which, of course, is the Dusty Rhodes specialty. So yeah, Dustin wins this match, and then Terry Funk actually cut a promo, a goofy promo earlier in the night, and he just rambling on. He said, "You haven't seen the last of me tonight. You haven't seen the last of me." And he came out after this match and hit Dustin in the head with the branding iron. And, you know, he started that deal with he and Buck were teaming after this. So.
Yeah, the hilarious thing about this is, like, you know, people say, oh, TNA or, oh, late WCW. This is another one of them wacky WCW moments where Terry Funk, who's going to stay on with the company, wrestles Tully Blanchard and doesn't even win the match. And Tully Blanchard is going to leave anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Well, Tully probably refused to do the job to him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I'm sure. They had a match between Ric Flair against, he had a mystery opponent, which is also kind of funny how they, you know, have this whole, like, mystery opponent thing, because it's one of their big pay-per-views. It's the world title match. And it's Barry Windham, and Barry Windham had been sitting out his contract. He just wanted out. And they finally asked him to come back for this one last match. And, you know, he didn't come back, you know, for a while after this. He went to WWF for stuff.
Yeah, he came back as a stalker in, like, late 96 WWF.
Which is crazy. That was, yeah, it's absurd. But, yeah, so he was the mystery opponent, and it was a pretty good match, but bad for their standards. And,
I remember, you know, the night before on WCW Saturday Night, because they're building up. Rob Parker says, "I'm bringing in a former blind world champion to face you, Ric Flair." And, of course, they're doing the Hogan stuff at this time. So, you know, they make their little insinuation in there. You know, could it be Hulk Hogan? And but they do some kind of a tag match. And at the end of it, the mystery opponent comes out. And he's got a Bad Street Brad Armstrong's mask on, for one thing. And I see the blonde hair. And I say, and it's another one of those things where when you see a guy in a mask, like, doing stuff, you can immediately tell who it is. I immediately knew it was Barry Windham, just by the way.
Well, Barry Windham's tall as hell, number one.
Yeah.
And, like, no one else has, like, a body like him either. You know, he's like tall and lanky, but also, like, you know, a pretty thick guy. So, you know, it's...
And he showed up for this match completely out of shape. He was, like, over 300 pounds.
Yes. He was just...
I mean, it was kind of sad to see. Be honest with you.
He's worn out of his contract. But you had mentioned Hulk Hogan. At this point, everybody in the world knew Hogan was coming. I mean, we all knew.
Yeah.
It was, you know, in the process of happening. I think it happened actually this month, either this month or, yeah, it was this month Hogan was shown, like, in the crowd on a Saturday night.
Was he? I don't remember.
Yeah, I'm almost positive that he was, in the crowd on a Saturday night.
I just remember on one of the WCW Saturday nights, they had just out of the blue, like, during like, a squash match, just announced that he had signed.
Yes, I remember that very distinctly as well. All right. Like we had talked about with Dave Sullivan last week, Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan beat the Nasty Boys to win the titles, like, in a Philadelphia street fight. And it was awesome. It was short, but it was so good.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was like
match.
The most hardcore thing I had ever seen at the time.
Yeah, and being in Philly, that crowd really got into it.
Yes, yes.
The special ref was Dave the Hammer Schultz. He was Philadelphia Flyers. And I just remember in one of the promos, and Kevin Sullivan cut a promo for this match. And you know, Cactus had lost an ear earlier in the year, you know, in that thing with Vader and Germany.
Yeah.
And he said, I can guarantee you one thing. There's three people going to be missing body parts in Philadelphia. It's going to be Cactus Jack, the Nasty Boys, and John Crook. I said, oh, my God. Because he had just gone through testicular cancer and had one of his nuts removed. One of the most horrible things I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, my God.
It's just classless.
That was really funny, though. All right, and then, like we said, Rick Rude had left.
Real quick, I just remember after this match, they did, like, an interview with Vern Gagne. And he just said, I don't want to ever see a match like that again. All that crap, and he just buried this match, this awesome match they just had. He said, I don't ever want to, that's not what wrestling's about. I don't ever want to see a match like that again.
Oh, his old ass. Yes. Because Vern had just given up his company a couple of years before, and every once in a while would appear on these, like, legend shows and stuff like that.
Yeah, remember Greg Gagne was, like, on the championship committee and some of the storylines where he was
making
announcements and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was nice of the company to bring him in, you know, because he didn't have a pot to piss in. All right, so the main event, Rick Rude left the company because he was injured, and they had said that, you know, he showed up out of whack or whatever, Tony Schiavone. And so Sting was supposed to be given the title, but he said he would wrestle Vader because it was supposed to be Rude versus Vader. And Sting just beat him with a splash. It was a very flat finish.
The crowd was chanting, Sting must die.
Yes, Sting must die. And, so the winner got that vacant WCW International title.
I remember being another decent Vader-Sting match. I don't think they really had too many bad matches.
No, they would never have bad matches.
I love Vader because he's one of those big guys that go up for you. You can suplex him. You can slam him. He can do anything. You know, he's not like King Kong Bundy's or One Man Gang's, where they don't want to do anything with you.
No, it's definitely like that. And also on one of the main event tapings, the Triple H push began because Terror Rising defeated WCW TV champion Larry Zbyszko after you know he had won the title somewhere.
He won on
Saturday night. Because Regal showed up and brawled with him, so he got counted out. So that Triple H push began, you know, quite a few years before.
I just remember it was weird because they had that TV title match. You remember it went off the air with a winner. They were still wrestling, and I said, well, nothing happened in this match. And then I tuned into, like, the Power Hour or something, like, the next week, and Zbyszko has the TV title, and he beat him after they went off the air, but they showed the rest of the match.
Oh, my gosh. This thing, we have the Clash coming up, the Clash of the Champions in June. And they had already announced on TV during that jobber match that Hulk Hogan had signed. And it was such a big thing because, like, I honestly thought that it would never, ever happen. I mean, I really thought, like, he would never leave the WWF. So it was, like, so, like, you know, just crazy. Because, you know, he was a WWF guy, and everybody knew he was a WWF guy. But I never thought that, like, when I was young, I didn't know anything about, like, how, you know, he wanted creative control and all this BS. I didn't know any of that. So I was, you know, I was excited at the time, had no idea what I was getting myself into. So we're at the Clash of the Champions.
Wait,
and
talk about the ticker tape parade real quick.
Yes, okay. Okay.
This time.
You explain it because you'll explain it better than I will.
Yeah, they had this ticker tape parade for Hogan. He's in a gang. I can't remember what kind of car. I think it was like a Corvette or something. And they had this big parade and at Disney MGM Studios to announce the signing. And they go to this press conference. And these reporters, first question that a reporter gets Hulk Hogan after he has signed with World Championship Wrestling, can you show us the 24-inch Pythons, Hulkster? I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. These are reporters saying this. Hi, I'm Bob Smith from the New York Times. Can you show me those 24-inch pythons, Hulk Hogan? Like, anybody would ever say that, you know what I mean? Like, you know.
It was just so ridiculous.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's not like I was expecting the question, like, Hulk, do you think Vince is going to get off the steroid charges? Because, you know, the trial's going on at this time.
Yes. It was, you know, just, what do you think about WCW World Champion Ric Flair? Like, you know, who gives a shit? Ask him real stuff. but the thing, on all the weekly shows, they would do these little, you know, everybody was talking about Hogan coming in, and one of like the funnier ones was that huge rematch between Larry Zbyszko and Terror Rising. Right before the match, Larry Zbyszko cuts like a promo. And this is, it's taped before the Clash, but it happens after, because everybody knows Hogan's going to immediately go against Flair. But he says that, because it's going to air, you know, sometime at the end of June, that after the match between Hogan and Flair, Larry Zbyszko challenged the winner to a match. Could you imagine that feud, Hulk Hogan versus Larry Zbyszko on the main event? Actually, I probably would have preferred that to Brutus Beefcake, but, you know, whatever.
One other thing before we get to the Clash, you know, they're doing the Sting and Flair, and they're going to unify the International and WCW title.
Yeah.
So I'm watching the WCW main event the Sunday before, and Gene Okerlund comes on, it's Clash of the Champions report. He's going to update us on what's going to happen this Wednesday. And he proceeds to say, after Ric Flair was victorious this past Wednesday at the Clash of the Champions to unify the international and the world titles, what's next for him? Talks about him going on to face Hogan.
Are you serious?
Yes, I'm completely serious. I vividly remember this because it was so ridiculous. Somebody put in the wrong tape. And I don't know how this happened. It's always stupid to me when shit like this happens. I don't understand how it happens. And
how could you? Well, because people don't even pay attention. You know, like they don't watch. They don't watch their own show.
This is when it became clear to me about this business. You know, I mean, you know, I knew before, but you just told me right here on TV. They're talking about the outcome of a match that hasn't taken place yet. I mean, and then they say, and then he says, like, after Arn Anderson accepted Dustin Rhodes asked Arn Anderson to be his partner, Arn accepted, and he wasn't going to accept until Wednesday night. He was going to get his answer to go get, like, Terry Funk and Book at Bash at the Beach, and I just, oh, God. I think he even threw in his, Lord Steven Regal won the TV title back, too.
Yes.
I thought I was in Twilight Zone or something like that. It was so weird. And then they tried WCW themselves, like came out, I think it was in like the sheets or something. Said, well we take like two different two different ones depending on who's gonna win the match or something like that. You know, they take one that says Sting won, and then they take one that says Ric Flair won, which is total bullshit. Because they already know who's going to win the match going in, you know? It was just so stupid.
Yeah, well, that's so dumb. One of the funniest things about, so we're at the Clash, okay? It's the June 23rd, 1994, in Charleston, South Carolina, and they have Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan. They beat the Nasty Boys after Dave Evad assaulted one of them on the floor with his crutch. And the funny thing about this was, like, they wanted to show that Dave Sullivan was dyslexic. So he's wearing this shirt that says Hulk Salur, which is rules backward. But they didn't even think that, like, why wouldn't they put Hulk backwards too?
And
so he's only like partially dyslexic. You know, only rules is backwards for him. Hulk is fine though. And I don't know. It's just funny. It's funny. And another thing that it's just real fast. Tex Lessinger wrestles the Guardian Angel in the next match. And the thing about this whole Guardian Angel thing was WCW had Ray Traylor as the boss. And it was too close to the Big Boss when they got sued. So Nick Bockwinkel, who is like apparently also some sort of high official in law enforcement, stripped him of his handcuffs and his nightstick. He just took it away from him, like a mom would take away, someone's freaking toy. And so they, I'm trying to think. So he goes. They play these vignettes, you know, and the vignettes are of him, like, I think he was on the streets of New York, right?
Yeah, he was training with the Guardian Angels or something like that.
He's training with the Guardian Angels. Because if he cannot be a police officer, he sure as hell can be a Guardian Angel. Which Guardian Angels are absolutely, they can do jack shit. They can't do anything. They, like, essentially could be like, you know, help! Help me! That's it. He goes through his training, and they show these vignettes a couple of times. So the awesome Guardian Angel, which not only is he a member of the Guardian Angels, but that's his new name. He's not only a member, but he is the Guardian Angel. I always thought that was the stupidest thing. Even when I was 11 years old, I thought that was fucking stupid.
Yeah, he came out with a beret on.
He had a beret. He wore a little red beret. He looked like a gay biker. Oh, gosh. All right, so what were you saying before?
Oh, I was going to say, you know, this was during this entire show, Hulk Hogan is shown in, you know, he's got a motorcade for his limo, like he's going to be assassinated or something.
They treat him like he's the president.
Like going on his way to the event, and it took him forever to get there. I don't know what the deal is with the airports and wherever they were. Where were they? They were in Charleston, South Carolina. I don't know. Maybe it's
South Carolina.
A hell of a drive from the airport to the arena.
It's quite a drive. It took us three hours to get there.
Yeah, at least he didn't say, like, when he was on the... At least he didn't say, like, when he came into TNA and they said his limo's on the way and they showed his limo a bunch of times. At least he didn't say, I've been all in the back all day with the boys, you know.
Yeah.
Even though he's been shown in this car for like a half an hour trying to get there.
Well, he's old now. You cannot blame anything Hogan says now because he's old. You know, he has that awesome recent Twitter video of him taking a shit for some reason.
God.
It was one of the most, like, disgusting things I've ever seen.
You know, even though Hulk Hogan's, all Hulk Hogan's bullshit, I still love the guy.
How could you not love him? Seriously.
I don't care how Andre's weight goes up every time he talks about WrestleMania 3 or whatever.
Yeah, that's so great.
Everybody in wrestling is full of shit. You know? I mean,
yeah.
I don't care. He's just full of more shit than other people. God.
I remember at WrestleMania 3, I picked up 1,200-pound Andre the Giant in front of 145,000 people.
I want to hear him exaggerate. If you don't exaggerate, then he ain't Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, seriously, like, you know, he's a good guy. You know, he's not bad.
Yeah.
People shouldn't hate him.
Yeah.
People shouldn't hate him so much.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a, you know, Regal regained the title. Johnny B. Badd beat Steve Austin. Austin, like, won the match. But, he had, like, brass knuckles or something. And instead of punching him in the face and knocking him out, he punched him in the stomach and then rolled him up. So apparently Johnny B. Badd, you know, had to go to the bathroom or something. Like, you know, or he got punched in the stomach.
They went off the air and also thinking Johnny B. Badd had won the title. You know?
People thought that.
And they didn't, they did the dusty finish, and I don't know, I guess, what was it? It was two different referees or something like that. I don't remember. They just gave the title back to Austin. Maybe it was the referee that counted wasn't the official referee in the match at the time or something.
This main event, I distinctly remember this. It was, well, first off, the Flair heel turn was so generic. There's nothing to it, really. Let's turn heel on the basis that Hulk Hogan was coming in and he needed to be the number one babyface. I mean, that's really essentially it. So, you know, he's still, like, being cheered when he comes out for this match because people still think he's a babyface. And I guess he kind of is, but... So it's a unification match. Sting is the international champion. Flair is the world champion. And this is kind of like the end of the Sherry thing where Sherry finally decides who she's going with. So at the beginning of the match, comes out with this, like, this fan almost. Like, it's like this, like, you know, fan, like, covering her face. And you don't know, you know, what she's doing. And she, like, pulls the fan down, and she's wearing Sting paint. So everyone's like,
The exact same paint he had on in the match.
Yes, it's the exact paint. So, like, Shivani, like, she's with Sting, you know, like, all excited. And so at the end of the match, it just ends up being that... she ends up
getting wiped out is what she got.
She
took a bump. Flair was outside and Sting was going to do one of his dives over the top rope, and he pulls Sherry into it, and Flair pulls Sherry into it, and Sting lands on her, and her head hits like the back of the guardrail going down. I thought she was dead.
It was brutal. I remember when I read that she died, it said, Sherry Martel found dead due to complications from fall at Clash of the Champions from Charleston, South Carolina. That's why she died. It is 100% because of that fall. There's no other explanation. She was on hillbilly heroin. She was from that fall. And then, of course, they all, like, beat up on Sting until Hogan comes out. He makes the save with Jimmy Hart still, and, you know, they clear the ring, and then Mean Gene does an interview with Hogan, and he wanted Flair to meet him at Saturday Night, and he dared Ric Flair to accept his challenge for a title match, even though he had not beaten anybody yet. So that's what we got there. Yes. So, what they're building up for Bash at the Beach 94, which is July, they are they're building up Sting versus Regal in one of the matches.
But tell you how far Sting had fallen off the radar.
Yes, yes. And since he ended up, the thing that's weird is like when they first were talking about this match, it was kind of before the Clash of the Champions. At least I remember hearing Clash of the Champion. He was going to wrestle, which is kind of would be wrestling championship when he.
Hello.
Yeah. So another thing that he was going to lose. Well, he couldn't wrestle that match supposedly because that match. So of course that's a decision. And this is in Orlando. They're building up the fact that Hogan is debuting. So this is their big pay per view. We didn't order this pay per view, but everybody in all my friends saw this show because for some reason WCW in like where I was at review for free because it was like a 1 day to celebrate Hulk Hogan coming in. They had 1 day of this pay per view, so we actually got this one for free. I mean, literally everybody I knew that liked wrestling watched the show because it was for free on pay per view, and everybody knew it. For our, I think our cable was Time Warner at the time, so I get to kind of, yeah. So everybody got it for free. I don't know if it was like that for you, but we got the pay per view for free.
I didn't even have pay per view at this point in time in my life. I couldn't even get it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, we got
the last Saturday night.
Yes, we have not discussed the last Saturday night yet.
Yeah, I was just going to say they were doing this fan vote, because see which match you wanted to see, and it came down to Ric Flair fought Sting to a no contest. That was the match the fans voted for when, since it was Sherry and Hogan interfered, and she clawed Sting's eye, and I think that's why he was out of the Bash at the Beach match from the eye injury.
Yes, I distinctly remember that, but the whole thing about it was like they had been advertising that match for a long period of time, and I remember even before the Clash of the Champions, I remember they advertised that Bash at the Beach match. I'm certain that I remember hearing that.
Yeah.
All right, so they had Vader, who's in a feud now with the Guardian Angel, which is also with Hogan coming in. There was a lot of rumors going around that he did not want to work with Vader. So Vader, of course, was moved down the card to one of Hogan's buddies, which is the Guardian Angel, and they didn't kill off Vader. They let him win via disqualification, but. The thing about this, the nightstick was back. Why couldn't he just be the big boss man then, or the boss?
I don't know.
So horrible.
Didn't they, now in the Regal Johnny B. Bad match, didn't they do something with, like, Antonio Inoki afterwards? Antonio Inoki was there for some reason. I think just to make the Hogan thing look like a big international deal. Yeah, and they were giving him some kind of award afterwards, and Steve Regal got in his face or something, and it led to a match at the next Clash of the Champions.
Yes, which poor Regal had to lose. I hated Inoki. Hated him.
Inoki went on that streak around this time. He's beating everybody. He's beating Ric Flair in Korea. He's beating Vader in Japan, and he beat Sting in Japan, and I don't know. I never saw a big deal about Antonio Inoki. I thought he sucked, to be honest with you.
So, real funny story regarding Antonio Inoki. So, I went to the Hall of Fame this year with my girlfriend, and Antonio Inoki is getting inducted. And, like, she doesn't really know all that much about, old school wrestling or whatever. And she just looked, like, completely so lost when he was out there, like, the entire time. Until he got the entire crowd to cheer, because she'll cheer for anybody as long as you just tell her to. So he's like, 1, 2, 3, blah, 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 and she's just, like, sitting there smiling. So, like, the only one fan of Antonio Inoki I have is my girlfriend, so. Yes, so we're at Beth the Beach, and this was awesome. There's Terry Funk and Buckhouse Buck. Colonel Robert Parker defeated Dustin Rhodes and Arn Anderson. And Arn Anderson was a babyface from where Ric Flair was a babyface. So they were both, it seems like they're always on the same side, it seems like.
You knew he was turning in this match, didn't you? I knew he was turning
I had no idea. I had no idea.
I knew he was going to turn in this match. And
I really didn't know.
But yeah, it was good. Yeah.
Well, Rhodes tagged. Well, actually, I figured it out eventually because Rhodes was in the match the whole time. And then Arn Anderson dropped him with a sick DDT, and then put Terry on top of him, and he joined the stud stable. Which, I mean, honest to God, what a great team! What a great group of guys: Buck, Terry Funk, and Arn Anderson, as like all aligned. Weren't they great?
Yeah,
like an awesome stable.
I really like, you got the two crazies in Bunkhouse Buck and Terry Funk, and then you got Arn Anderson. You know,
he's
kind of like the straight guy in the whole group.
Yes. And then we have Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma defeating Cactus Jack and Kevin Sullivan for the titles.
Yeah. Roman and Orndorff were a good team, I thought. I thought they were a pretty good team.
I hate Paul Roma, but I don't know if people are realizing there's a trend here. There's a trend here right now. All the heels, Regal won, Vader won, Terry Funk and Buckhouse Bunk won, Paul Orndorff and Paul Roma won. The next
Steve
match,
Austin.
WWE,
yeah.
Steve Austin wins, and you know the. So all the heels have won. So, you know, we need a hero, you know. And so then all of a sudden that awful, awful new theme music for Hogan comes out for no reason. I mean, this, like, they overdid this to the max for Hogan coming in. And I do love Hogan. But, I mean, so Hogan, of course, is Ric Flair with Shaq. So, you know, Shaq's a big star now, but in 94, Shaq was, like, the biggest thing in the world. You know, everybody loved Shaq. He had a video game. Yeah, everybody just loved Shaq. Well, Mr. T, who I have no idea thought that it would be a big deal, that Mr. T made an appearance in 1994. And they paid him a lot of money, too. So Mr. T interferes and he just grabs Sensational Sherry and just takes her backstage. So apparently Mr. T raped Sherry. We have no idea what happened between them. I mean, that was more insane than anything. The fact that he just smacked the woman, he spanked her ass, took her to the backstage area, and no one heard from them after that. Mr. T, I think, violated poor Sherry. And then Mr. T comes back out. Obviously, he just banged Sherry. And he celebrates in the ring with Mr. T celebrates with Hulk Hogan and Shaq. And, God.
I just remember after the match, well, they showed, like, on TV the next week. I said, after the match, another interviewing him back in the locker room. And Beefcake's there. Hacksaw Duggan shows up. I said, oh, fuck. Now it starts.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Bringing, you know, we're going to see a collection of geeks from the 80s come in. And,
yes.
The geeks from the 80s sure did come in. We talk about, real quick, I thought the Steve Austin against Ricky Steamboat was a hell of a match.
It was a really good match, and it was the highlight of the show.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, seriously, they even put it on a so-called DVD. Because, I mean, it really was, like, it was the highlight of the show, I mean, by far. Yeah, they they always meshed very well together. And another pair of wrestlers that were wrestling against Van and Regal had really good matches too.
Yeah.
I always thought they were good. So yeah, like literally they taped they taped a Saturday night, like a couple nights later, and that's where Duggan showed up right then. And so yeah, you're right, you know, yeah, wow, this is happening. This really
yeah,
is happening.
And it's gonna get worse next week, believe me.
Oh yeah.
And I get to rant about the fall of 1994.
Next week, you guys, I mean, please listen, because we are getting deep into this is the real invasion. This, honest to God, was the real invasion. 2001 had nothing at all on this, because this was really those stars that we, you know, like I grew up with in the 80s and early 90s, just showing up at WCW. And it wasn't one or two. It was everybody. It was everybody.
It was an invasion full of bullshit is what it was.
Yeah, and you even hear, like, I remember hearing a story. I think it might have even been in Brian's book. Everybody should go check it out, The Death of WCW, Brian Alvarez on Amazon. But he wrote that when they had the Cruiserweight title, like a tournament, Hogan wanted to give the title to Coco Beware.
Jesus Christ.
Could you imagine that? Dean Malenko, the Iceman, and then, like, you know, like, the Paul Driver, he just comes out, freaking flaps his wings, and he beats Dean Malenko? That's absurd.
God.
Oh.
Don't worry, this company
yeah.
is good.
Yes, it was really bad. So
yeah, we're gonna get the bullshit. Like we're probably gonna sound like we're like a bunch of assholes, but I got a lot of shit to rant about next week.
But there is one bright spot that we will talk about next week, and that is the debut of Maine, who's one of my favorite.
Oh yeah, I love Maine. He was tremendous. I loved him. Yeah, I loved him as a Haku in WWF, and yeah, Maine was tremendous.
He's so great. So we're warning you, next week may be a slightly negative show, but we'll keep it positive. I will have my positive take on it because I was a little kid, but you know it's really going to be a great show. It's going to be a fun show. So you know, everybody check it out next week. We will have now that Hogan is in WCW, wait for his cast of lost stars to come in WCW and ruin it. So
imagine how much bullshit we're going to. Oh, gosh, and then we're going to get to 95, and that's even more bullshit than
I
the
liked
start.
95. I swear I liked it.
Wait.
I love
there's some stuff.
I'm serious.
The Dungeon of Doom, where the vignettes were so entertainingly awful. I mean, I liked them, but, I mean, still, it just was like a bunch of shit.
Water.
You know.
Like
it's cold.
Like
it's not hot, or it's not hot, or something like that.
Yeah. We need to. You're better at the stuff than I can. If you can find that on YouTube and rip the audio so we can play it, that'd be great.
We need to get R.D. Reynolds on the show or something like that sometime.
To talk about that.
We can talk about all that.
Gosh.
Terrible stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, because Brian doesn't remember that. Yeah, we'll just try getting R&D on that show. Shoot him an email if you can. Or I'll do it, whatever.
Okay.
We will work that out. But yeah, we have the we have the Hogan takeover of WCW. We'll probably finish off the year next week, most likely. Tune in next week. And it'll be a great show?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Be sure to go to superfriendsuniverse.com to check podcasts. And go to superfriendsuniverse.com/PWF to check out our awesome podcast. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will see you.